woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Now, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the
sun. Welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tomo. Ricky on the board. SP Futures down 25. NASDAQ Futures down 132 as we are waiting around for some sort of an announcement or for some bombs to fly or other things. And, well, kind of an odd spot to be investing or to be trading or to be sitting listening and wondering what's going on. Do we have Professor Carl?
Come on, man. Chief, this is the best day of the year so far.
Why, what happened? Did you, I'm going to ask you what you did last
night. It's power plant and water day.
Yeah, it's anti-UN convention day. We don't read those things, though.
Oh, come on now. Now, you know, you and I have sparred on that one long before this
time. I know. Those rules are for other people. I get it.
No, those rules aren't for anybody.
Okay.
And by the way, if some other people, not just the United States, not just Israel, but some other people, you know, like Iran, I don't know, pick one, China.
Whose bridges did they bomb this year?
China. Well, No. Here's my point. If we had other nations that actually honored the facts, as opposed to the feel goodism, let's protect the elite people, let's protect the politicians, screw all your kids that get to go die in the war when they either volunteer or get drafted. No. I have yet to see anyone wave a magic Harry Potter wand and assemble a cruise missile or ship or submarine or, for that matter, just a single round of ammunition. I've never seen that happen. My entire life, I'm 62 years old, and I've never once seen a military manifest any of these things. Instead, they've had to be made. And who makes them?
Civilians. People make money. There's always a class that makes money at war, and there's a class that lose their kids in war.
Well, so you know what? I like democratizing the death and destruction that inevitably comes with war.
So you're okay with Netanyahu assassinating everybody else's leaders?
As long as everybody's okay with him being assassinated and his children being strung up by their genitals and displayed in the public square.
I don't think he's okay with that.
Well, I don't care if he's okay with it. I'm okay with it. Because he imposes it on other people.
These morals go one way, Carl. Don't you?
No, Chief. As far as I'm concerned, they go all ways. And the way that the way that we greatly reduce. And by the way, this is not because I happen to be a bloodthirsty SOB like a pit bull that's been trained.
You're not actually saying that the rules should apply to everybody, are you?
Go figure.
No, well, you know that is un-American.
No, what I am saying is that the way you reduce war is by making it cost everybody and nobody is protected. And by the way, the persons who give the orders, the persons who start the war, which is never the little guy, right? It's never people like you and me.
No.
We are not the ones who start wars. It's presidents. It's Secretary of Defenses. It is, you know, it's Congress. All right, well, at least it's supposed to be Congress. Well, it doesn't seem to be anymore, but I mean, it's supposed to be Congress. I mean, that's the theory anyway. It's my assertion that those people need to have a missile land on their house.
So you're a proponent of, was it Michael Moore? What war did we go to?
What I'm a proponent of, Chief, is that the deterrent effect on war that used to exist back when knights rolled, you know, and kings rolled horses, right?
Yeah.
And if you wanted to kill somebody, you had to look them in the eye while you were doing it. There was a very strong deterrent effect, because no matter, I mean, it was absolutely true that the king had the best horse, he had the best barding on his horse, he had the best armor, and he had the best sword. Why? Because he had the most money. Okay, so, I mean, that was duh. However, he still was subject to the fact that some lucky son of a bitch with a bow and arrow on the other side could put one right through his eye slit.
Or Achilles could get shot in his heel.
Any one of a hundred different things could go wrong, and if they did, he died just like everybody else.
Do you think anybody knows that story, where the Achilles heel came from?
Well, you know, maybe, probably not very many. I mean, you know, nowadays we can fix those. Back then, you really couldn't.
Well, I won't go into it, but I did like Greek mythology. Interesting feelings about the world this morning after a conversation with a couple of people last night. A couple of Trumpers.
Oh.
Yeah, and one of them I know is the lady bartender downstairs. Loves the man because everybody's after him, and he's a fighter, and he hates the people I hate. Whatever, I'd essentially perform a sex act on him tonight if I had the chance. It's at that stage.
Really? That bad?
Oh, that bad. That bad.
I mean, that good. Okay,
yeah,
whatever.
And, to the point where no matter what he does, no matter how many people get killed, he's her man.
Well, you know what? I love the jealous Cowboys cheerleaders, but only because I have this fantasy of them showing up at, you know, 3 o'clock in the morning. And,
well, you better better only be one. Maybe, I don't know if you can handle more than one.
Hey, listen, if I died doing it, I'd die with a smile on my face, so it's okay.
So then this older black gentleman standing next to me, he's kind of hearing this conversation. So he immediately pipes in, which is fine, nice enough guy. But the conversation I had with him, I feel like I just took a notch down. By the way, not because he happened to be black, it had nothing to do with it. But it's all about, you can tell the guy listened to Newsmax.
Oh, God.
And he said, well, how's work been for you? And I said, well, it's fine, except it's pretty odd trading and trying to manage money for people when people are front running ahead of you and those kinds of things. And, you know, I'm not a violent man, but you, a guy who is very good at inventing things, if you could get me a wristwatch, which I don't wear, but I would wear one, if you could get me a wristwatch that operates as a squirt gun, and the next time I mention something about front running, if the person says, what about Pelosi, I get to squirt him.
I think you need a James Bond style one that has the exploding dial in it or something like that.
Something like that. I mean, and I said, wait a minute, what does Pelosi have anything to do with anything? Well, she was cheating. I said, okay, first of all, you don't know, nor the people that you listen to, because I don't know when I'm in the business, what exactly she traded. I know she made a lot of money over a really lot of years. I don't know that she was ever accused of front-running essentially a presidential policy decision. I don't know she would have anywhere near the capability of doing that, that she could, you know, sell oil before somebody extends a ceasefire thing or something. And seemingly it's all over the thing about how many people sold oil futures. And this is the stuff that people pick up on, not just the stuff that I see, because I just took it up. He basically said that these guys get a pass forever and whatever they do, because it can't be as bad as what she did, so they get to do it without anybody investigating or anything.
Oh, good God.
I mean, that's basically what he was talking about. So, in other words, if I saw somebody go buy me 120 on the Ryan, I get to go 100 for the rest of my life. And if I ever get pulled over, say, I saw this guy going 120, and the guy goes, okay, you can go now.
Well, my problem with that general attitude, okay, and I don't care which side of the aisle it comes from, it makes absolutely no difference, is that's exactly why we're here with all this medical shit.
Without a doubt.
It's also why we're here with all this front-running shit.
It's all why we're here, because of the traffic, by the stop signs, you name it, it's the same attitude.
Well, Fox News has a thing up this morning that, you know, we have teen trends in Chicago.
Yeah.
By the way, anybody else would call that felony criminal mischief, wrecking someone's car because you're jumping on it. Okay. I don't care if you're 14. In any civilized society, you go to prison for that shit until you can pay for the vehicle that you destroyed.
I agree.
Well, guess what? We can't do that. Those are children. Oh, really? No, they're feral animals, and in a sane society, you tell people, cut that crap out or you're going to shoot them.
Well, you know, it's somewhat interesting. Our guest and my significant other, Audrey, I went to one of her, last week she had a reunion of all her people in the drum corps. I don't know if people even know what that is, but there's drum and bugle corps. And there was one in Chicago in the neighborhood she grew up in, which was a fairly poor blue-collar neighborhood in the middle of the city.
Yeah.
All the guys had, well, you had kids that could easily become feral kids, but the parents didn't allow it.
Well, duh.
And, but they also had, all winter, they would practice in gyms, then they would go on the road in the summer and participate in these things. They had parents where, you know, the kids got in buses, and there was a couple of, you know, 40-footers, where they could serve, well, there was 150 kids, so they served four meals a day.
Right.
They would contract to high schools where everybody could sleep on the floor, and of course they had the showers for men and women and so forth, and they had the field there they could practice on, and this is what they did. It was always an effort to have teenage kids have productive stuff to do, because left to their own devices, kids can be kids. You need to have something positive to do, whether it's sports, whether it's something. And yet now people think that the parents don't even know where the kids are. Call home. First of all, there's no landline. There's no home to call to. Maybe you'll catch the parents someplace. God knows what the parents are. And a lot of these shootings and stuff are 1 o'clock, 2, 3 in the morning. Everybody's out in the street. What are you doing there? I mean, the whole fabric. But it always was a lot of work to raise kids, especially teenagers. Now nobody wants to do it, and they wonder why they all turn out screwed up, or a lot of them do.
Well, look, I wasn't exactly an angel when I was young.
Well, nobody was.
I mean,
it's that. But you're not this. You're not. You know.
But I wasn't running around with a gun at 2 o'clock in the morning shooting at people either. Right. So I mean. The thing is that all of it is part of the same degeneration. Okay.
Well, it's all the same. It's all the same subject.
It's all the same thing. Yes, there's differing degrees. Yes, there's differing whatever. But it goes all the way to the top and all the way to the bottom. All right. And the stuff that's going on now. I put up an article that I posted this morning. Said. You need to be really careful, like from a market's point of view, because the couple months before this Iran thing started, we had PPI data that I'd been tracking a trend for the last 3-4 months, right? And that we've got a cost push impulse. It's coming directly. I mean, you can trace this directly to monetary policy, right? You're going to run
always does, bud.
Well, yeah, you're going to run interest rates that are below the level of federal deficit spending, okay? And we've been doing this. I article up on this, the root of it all, just before the start of April, a few days ahead. And all you got to do is go over to Fred and graph Fed funds rate and the federal deficit as percentage of GDP. Invert the deficit so that it's above the line, so they're on the same scale, right? They're not inverted. It literally takes 5 seconds to put that in there, All right. I mean, you know, hey, the St. Louis Fed has an awful lot of really good data that's official government information. It's right there in your face, and it can be used by anybody that cares to look. All right. You just have to care to look. And what you will see is that up until...
Well, you can't find weekly money supply. That only goes to a select few.
Well, you know, but you know what? Weekly money supply is this one tells you exactly where all this bullshit has come from over the last 25 years. Up until the 2000 scare about COBOL code, all right, which was absolute crap, and I said so at the time, and it turned out to be right. It's only been the way I've made basically all my money throughout my professional career is programming computers in one form or another, right?
I don't know much about this, but I would push back on that. But go ahead, keep going.
Well, all right. So here's the thing. Up until that point, there was never a period of time of any significance where the effect, or in degree, even when there was of, you know, where it happened, in degree it was insignificant. And there were a couple times when it happened, but it was, again, in degree it was insignificant, where the Fed funds rate was below the federal deficit spending as a percentage of GDP. Not in dollars, but as a percentage of GDP. All right. Never prior to that time. It then was done in the couple of years after 2000. And it is, and I argue, it is the reason we had a housing bubble. The entire reason. And they realized what they were doing. They stopped it, and we got the crash. All right? And out of that came...
Which housing bubble are you talking about? 2001 or 7?
No, 2007.
Okay.
Okay. Out of that, we got the 2007-2008 collapse. And then, in response to that, the policymakers at the Federal Reserve and Congress, which, by the way, holds the actual purse strings... They're the ones that have to authorize every single penny of federal spending that occurs. They, between the two of them, deliberately, despite being told by everybody involved, including Greenspan, that this was something that could not be maintained. So what did they do? They confirmed a potato in the form of Yellen, all right, who would get on her knees and blow whoever told her to say whatever they wanted her to say. Clamped rates at zero for a decade, and while the federal government was running operating deficits in the 6-7% range all the way through. Then, of course, COVID happens. All right, and we all know what happened to federal deficit spending. I mean, that got as high as 15% of GDP.
Money supply went up 40% in 18 months.
I'm just saying it was 15% of GDP. All right. Hello, only for a year or so, but still, all right. During the time that rates were jammed back to zero, so now you got a 15% spread. That's never happened before.
Well, I think the piece here, your history here, is pretty much spot on, except for one spot. When the Y2K thing, which, of course, nobody even remembers anymore.
Well, I do.
Well, I do, too. But I also think that it was actually a much bigger deal than you think, in retrospect.
No, it wasn't.
Well, okay.
I know. You and I disagree on this.
No, what I'm saying is I was involved in a big firm, not that you weren't.
Right.
But what they had, because of everybody was afraid of it 2 or 3 years in advance.
Right.
They essentially brought a lot of their normal, I'll say normal maintenance, normal reprogramming that you would do every year and stuff that was that old. They brought it forward a lot. So,
I know.
So they ended up having virtually no problem. But that's not the same as saying if they would have done nothing, they would have had no problem.
No. I'm not saying that they would have done nothing. Listen, Chief, there are two things. So, you know, in any business, in any operating line of business, okay, you know, you own a building, you're supposed to have a sinking fund for the roof,
okay.
Right? Nobody does that. I know nobody does. I'm saying if you're going to do actual reasonable accounting and actual reasonable forward planning and actual, all kinds of things with the word reasonable in them in front. Right? In other words, you're going to be a sane operator of a business.
Next year, you're going to get your Webster, and it's not going to have the word reasonable in it.
Yeah, I know. They'll define it out, right?
Yeah.
But those things are all supposed to happen. I went after the Okaloosa School Board in a big way because they blew all the money that was supposed to have been sequestered for this. And I went after them, said they all ought to be in prison because they have a fiduciary responsibility to the taxpayer. All right? Oh, by the way, blowing it on game consoles for your gym and then coming back and whining that you don't have money to replace the chillers in your the cafeterias is bullshit.
Okay, but
all right? But here is my point. In the technical world, in the computer world, all right, which is where I've where I've made my money over my entire professional life, going back to when I first started writing code for money, I was like 14. All right, it was only $100, but still, point being the same, right? There's a thing called technical debt. All right, which is exactly identical to not putting aside the sinking fund for the roof on your building. It just happens to be in your computer code. Right?
Well, yeah. I mean,
and by the way, companies are really, really good at doing this because guess what? And especially now, hey, you think we have had a problem with this in the past. The crap that's going on with so-called AI and vibe coding now is going to make that look like a cakewalk when that debt comes.
All right, we'll go back to what you just said about the history of the money supply stuff. And I think you're missing, I think, and again, when you hear me say it, you can decide whether you like it or not, or hell.
Yeah.
the thing that made the Y2K unique in terms of money supply, and again, this is history that you and I agree on this, near the end of 1999, when we were going to flip over, right, the market had been running up anyway.
Yeah,
the dot bombs coming, all that crap was going. So when the Fed decided to pour more money in case everything crashed, and then people just had to go to their, we even had ATMs at the time. People had to go get cash money because people were getting it. People were pulling cash out. So they end up poured more money into the system for the last 6 months of 99 or four months, whatever it was. So all of a sudden, like Carl says, it didn't happen. Now, whether it never was a danger in the first place, or whether people prepared for it, basically nothing bad happened countrywide.
Right.
So now, what does the Fed do back in those days? What would a normal person do? We put too much money in, we're going to take it back out, which is essentially what they started to do. Problem is, they had pumped the market up so much by doing this. It was already up anyway because of the dot-bomb crap. The market comes crashing down. Ever since... And then they started putting more money back in, which created a lot of what Carl's talking about, the housing bubble in 2007. But the thing that's unique about it, no matter what crap they've done since then, including COVID, whenever they've poured money into the system to salve some wound, they never since then have pulled it back out.
That's right, and that's what this graph shows.
And that's exactly what it shows. It's not the 40... Well, it was a mistake to pour the 40% in during COVID and send people out checks. It's a bigger mistake to not have pulled some of it back out. Because people look at this. We had, I don't know how long, by whatever definition you use, the COVID years was an economic depression. Not recession, depression.
But only for a short period
of
time.
Okay, but I understand
that. But yes.
The market went straight up. Now, why is that? Because they were pouring money into the system. But now once you get the right people, me, my investors, Carl, people that have some stock, the right people, they don't want it coming back down again like it did in 2001.
So you stay with it, right? Well, yeah, except here's the thing, Chief. All right, so, if you look at exogenous shocks, right? Obviously a virus showing up, regardless of what you believe actually happened there, the fact is that there was a virus, people did get sick, and the fear factor got cranked to 11. Whether it was justified or not, it's not relevant. The point is it had an economic impact.
Yeah, it happened.
All right, it happened. And so those, you know, you have to deal with, you have to play the cards that you have on the table in front of you. It doesn't mean you like them. It doesn't mean that you can't go shoot the guy who rigged the deck later. But right now, you have to deal with the cards you have. And that's, you know, that's where we were. But, you know, as I've pointed out, as Hal's pointed out, all right, when you get down to it, money supply is, you know, at the end of the day, all of it flows through federal deficit spending and the spread between that as a percentage of GDP and short-term rates. All of it flows through those, the differential between those two things. And when you pay people to do something, you get more of it. So if you pay people to borrow...
By the way, you can have an increase or decrease in money supply even if the government is flat on their spending.
Well, I understand,
yeah.
Because, you know, because at least theoretically, okay, private parties can borrow against alleged assets, whether they're fairly valued or not, okay, and spend that money. And, oh, by the way, borrowing, no matter who's doing it, increases money supply. Because there's more credit circulating in the economy.
Especially when you have a zero, what's the holdback number?
The interest on excess reserves.
No.
The reserve ratio.
If you have a zero reserve ratio, which is insanity.
Which, by the way, Bernanke got inserted into the TARP bill that actually passed in one sentence change. All right.
But what you're saying right now, 90% of the bitching about inflation.
Yeah.
Is it's starting up again. Okay. So
hello.
But I'm saying 6 months ago or a year ago, 90% of the bitching about inflation had nothing to do with inflation. It had to do with price level that happened during the COVID stuff, where everything went up 30-35% over 2 years and has never come back down. A year ago to 18 months ago, the inflation over that 6 month period, even though they lied about it, was not the problem. It was the 35-40% that people were dealing with maybe a 10 or 15% raise in their income. That to this day is still really the issue. And now if these idiots pour more inflation on top of it, this world is not ready.
Well, it's there's an old saying, cure for high prices is high prices, right?
Well,
and people
that's
say,
a,
well, no. Well, and the retort is, no, it's not. We'll just emit more credit. And the problem with that is, as I pointed this out many times, the entire reason you cannot allow fraud into any sort of business that is funded by the public, which means any government funded program, I don't care what it is, I don't care if it's hospitals, I don't care if it's, you know, medical care, whatever have you, the reason you can't allow it is because every single entity, I mean, hell, your local county commission sits there and has meetings where they talk about growth. And what do they talk about? Growth is a percentage. Percentages on an annualized basis are compound functions. And as soon as you allow fraud into there, the fraud becomes compound over the years.
Hey.
And that ultimately destroys you.
Hey, by the way, well, there's no Joel today, so you've got some time here.
I get a little extra.
He went to the Final Four. His Michigan team won.
Well.
So he's a happy camper this morning. He's a Michigan fan. He hope he got in. He went down there without a ticket. I'm sure he got in. I'm not sure, but Joel's a pretty resourceful dude. I have a question regarding the stuff Hal's been sending around. It's a new... first of all, it's pretty complicated, so we won't go too deep with it, but... everybody knows that I'm a kind of a money supply sort of dude, and I think Carl is with me on this. Hal is also, but you know, the wrinkle that he is pulling out that I'm starting to. First, I thought he was a little out there with it. Now I'm not so sure, Carl. But I'm not sure I fully understand it, but maybe you can help me. What Carl is saying is that not only is the money supply going up, which is what I'm talking about all the time, and you're with me on this, I believe.
Yeah.
But the way it's being done is they're pouring money into the system, but then they're paying pretty good interest on reserves to drag some of the money back out. And he's convinced that because it's only really reaching some of the population, meaning the people who want to take over company after company and those kinds of things.
It's reaching Goldman really
It's reaching those kinds of places and not regular people,
right?
In terms of, you know, the bank, the how the, you know, with that kind of money pouring in the system, everybody should be able to go get the third plumbing truck.
Yeah, but that ain't happening.
But that ain't happening, and it hasn't happened for a long time.
Well, by the way, that also doubles the price of the plumbing truck.
Right. So, but he's when he first started talking about this, I kind of didn't know where he was going, but now he's zeroing in and doing a lot better job of explaining, as I think as he's learning as he's going along. It's starting to make a lot of sense to me. What he's saying is the money only is coming out for, like, margin on stock. It's only coming out for people to buy other country companies, to buy ball teams, those kinds of things. It's really not coming out to the banks that regular people go to you know, to get the loan on the remodeling a house and selling it.
Chief, all you got to do, I mean, you know, you look at what a bank or credit union is paying on a money market account.
What I'm trying to go with this is I understand that this has been happening. You and I have talked about it for a decade. But I didn't realize, from what Hal is talking about, how it's so endemic into the system. The system is designing that to happen. Let's put it this way. I never put two and two together on that until he started bringing it up.
Yeah,
I know it was the result. I just didn't realize how it was happening. Can I say that? I mean,
by the way, that's a very serious problem.
Oh, it's a serious accusation.
Well, that it's by design?
Yeah. I mean,
welcome to reality, my friend.
Well, I mean, I never thought they were that smart. But they are.
Come on, these people. Listen, here's the.
This is a big deal to pull this off.
Well, this is way more. You know what? This is. You know, you have said before, if we ever get to the point that if you're not cheating, you're not trying. We're doomed. Okay. Well, guess what? We're there, and this is the same thing. Right, so, you know, this Doji database that I and some other people on my forum, along with a handful of others, have started to run through, right, and have done some analysis on, which, by the way, is not complicated, just to make it clear. Same thing, by the way, applies to all these illegal invaders that are in the country, and supposedly, oh, they just want to be here for a better life. Well, guess what? There's two realities. Either they're working under the table, in which case they're not paying taxes, but they're consuming services, other than sales tax, which, of course, everybody pays, right?
Property tax.
Well,
if you pay somebody, they're paying unemployment tax.
No. Now, wait a minute. Not if I'm paying you under the table, you're not paying unemployment tax.
That ship has sailed, by the way, under the table.
Okay, listen, Chief, I'm not arguing that. But then, in order for that to be the case, for me to be paying you, you have to have a TIN or a Social Security number. All right, because I have to file those reports and I have to pay those taxes. And now, unlike when I was running my company, I had to take the check to the bank. Now it's all electronic, so it's instant. Okay, I mean, it's out of your account the day payroll's due. I mean, that's the way it works. And so, okay, I mean, hell, I'm about to file my taxes and I owe them money. And you know, those funds are going to come out of my bank account the day I hit send. Right, I mean, that's the way it works.
Why don't you send him a check?
Well, I can do that if I want to, but you know.
But then you'd lose your whole mantra.
Oh, I'd make 30 cents on the float over the, you know.
Plus, you'd have to put 75 cents on it. You don't want to do that.
I'd have to put a dollar stamp on it or whatever.
Yeah, you don't want to do that.
I don't want to do that. But here's the point of this.
By the way, there's still only 75 cents for those that use them.
Well, I've got a roll of the Forever ones that I bought a while ago, so it'll be a while before I use them up, because I knew that was going to happen. So, you know, hey, buy some.
I mean, you know, if only it was 50 years ago, whenever there was inflation, you went out and bought like 5,000 subway tokens in New York.
Except then they made them worthless and you had to use the cards.
You know.
So Chicago did that crap too. The thing that gets me about all of this, though, is here we are with all of these impulses that are in the system, and yet, as I've pointed out now for a little while since this stuff with Iran started, it doesn't matter how credible the rumor is that there's some kind of deal. It doesn't matter how credible. It doesn't matter where it comes from, right? I mean, you could be on X and some jackass AI bot posts up something, right? Which, by the way, is pretty much all that's on the site now, along with every other social media site. The only real exception to that is anything that, that Trump puts up on Truth Social is probably actually coming from him, because he owns it.
But, yeah. him or somebody in the White House.
His lackey over there that he says, hey, go post that. The thing is, every single time that comes up, you get a 20, 30, 50 handle spike in the futures instantly. Okay? And what this tells me is that people are so scared of not being in, not necessarily being short, but not being in if there is a settlement to this thing. They're so blinded by that that they're paying zero attention to the fact that not only do we have this inflationary impulse that's already in the system that inexorably is going to lead to either extraordinarily higher prices, inflation rate, or the Fed's going to have to massively raise rates. And yet that 10% 10-year that you and I've talked about is going to happen.
You have a person in the White House that wants to raise defense spending 40% at the same time.
At the same time, he
wants to lower interest rates. How do you do both?
Well, Chief, that's exactly where it was going. Trump's budget proposal hit the tape a couple of days ago. Okay, almost $700 billion of additional defense spending.
Yeah.
All right, essentially a doubling of the defense budget, and something like $20 billion taken out
Carol,
of
the... Carol, you got Cuba to go, you got Venezuela, you got Greenland. Where are you starting, man?
By the way, about half of that increase is permanent, and the other half is this $300 billion supplemental he's talking about. Well, excuse me, does anybody realistically think that that's not going to spike inflation?
Well, it certainly is if they lower the rates.
it certainly is whether they lower the rates or not.
Well, when I say lower the rates, what I'm really saying is you're pouring money in the system.
Well, yeah, exactly. So, I mean, you know, we're going to go ahead and we're going to go from a 7% fiscal deficit to a 10%?
Yeah. Do we have Kenny?
Yes, we do.
All right, Carl, we should have Hal in a bit. If you're around and we start talking about this money number, feel free to pile in, because it's complicated enough where it probably takes three of us to explain it. Kenny, how are you? We're talking about, I'll just let you know what we've been talking about is Hal's been doing a lot of work on reserves and how they're going back and forth, and he's talking about now with the way they're doing it, and you and I have talked about this, has to do with the money being pouring into the system more than growth, right, which leads to inflation, is the way they're dragging it back out, not by the old federal funds thing. But the Fed is actually paying interest rates on reserves, and they're dragging it out of the dragging money out of the system by draining the banks back to the Fed, which is M0, I guess. It actually is acting so that only certain groups of people get to use the reserves that are being added to the system. That it's people that are borrowing money for stock, people borrowing money for ball teams, for mergers, but it's not extending at all to a smaller bank giving us a loan for our fourth plumbing truck, that it's actually coming out very selectively, and it's very ominous. And he's been working on this now for about a year and a half, and now he's starting to present some papers on this. I kind of noticed, and so did you, Kenny, because we've talked about how the interest rates going down never really extended to the rest of the population, and he's all over now how it's becoming embedded in the system, but they don't want that to happen, whoever the theys are. They only want certain people to be able to access the excess reserves. He's every paper he does, it's seemingly better and more provable, and he's getting closer and closer. But the first one I thought he was kind of nuts. now he's not nuts. I mean, the last one he presented it down at Auburn, Kenny, it's spot on. It looks to me. What do you think? Just my bad explanation here. What do you think about that?
I think you really have to study that, because I think part of that's very true. I think, right, there is that move that way. But I'd like to think that I'd like to think it's not, but I do think that parts of it are true, and so therefore it's going to take some more research, going to take some more understanding of what's happening and how the markets are interpreting it, right? But I do think that it's a valid argument. I think you have to consider it.
Well, I mean, what he says is it's way easier for somebody to borrow money to buy a stock than it is to go out and borrow money to have a plumbing truck.
because they'll give you margin on your stock portfolio as long as you have a decent stock portfolio. They'll give you margin on your stock portfolio because they're easy to sell. If it goes against you, they can force you to make those sales, and you can sell stocks fairly easily. You can't do that necessarily with, you know, a real asset like a house or a building or whatever, right? There's a lag there, right? You can't just hit the button and sell the house, or hit the button and sell the commercial piece of property, right? It takes time. So lending money on a stock portfolio is relatively easy because they're going to lend you 50%. They're not going to lend you 80%. And you know, if it goes against you, you know, if it's down 10% right away, they send you a note. You got to put up more money, and if you don't, they force the sale. So yes, it's easy to do that. I think that people get caught up in it. I think, you know, trading on margin is very, very dangerous, especially for people that, you know, that don't understand it, or they think that, oh wow, this is easy, look at this. I think it's very dangerous.
Well, do you think we're not going to change it, but if we could, the two of us, I think the market's a little more overpriced now than maybe it was 2 years ago or something. If a stock goes from, you know, some stocks deserve to go from 50 to 100, but some don't, and some just seem to go up with the momentum. Do you think the number that you can borrow at 100 should be 50%, the same as it was at 50? I mean, I don't know who would be the judge of this, but I tell you what, if you were to raise the margin on some of the future stuff here, I wouldn't be a bit. I mean, we have people that's where IB platform to do future stuff and do. And when you start talking about guys doing options and stuff on the futures, the margin's way less than it is on the security side. I don't know if that's
idea. Yeah, well, I don't know, because I don't trade futures, so, and I don't trade on margin. So I wouldn't. I don't want to profess to know that. I'm just going on what you're telling me. But yeah, I think that's a dangerous precedent, right? I think they make it too easy, right? They draw people in the same way, I think, that places like Robinhood, they've gamified the system that all these young kids think it's just it's a game. They think it's Nintendo. I think that's completely wrong. I think they should never have done that. They should, you know, investing is investing. It's not Nintendo. You want to go play Nintendo, go to Vegas. Well, right? That's my sense.
Well, they just got the big contract to do all the Trump stuff. What are you supposed to pay for that?
Who got the contract? Robin Hood?
Bank of New York.
You mean the Trump stuff? You mean the
all these new accounts.
The baby accounts?
Yeah, Robin Hood and Bank of New York.
To do the newborn accounts?
Yep.
Okay, well, I'm not sure why they would. I'm not sure why you couldn't do that at Fidelity or Schwab or anywhere else. I'm not sure why.
Because they didn't kiss the mistletoe, obviously.
Well, I understand that, but I think it's ridiculous because all investors, you can go anywhere you want, right? You can go to Fidelity, you can go to Schwab, you can go to E-Trade, you can go whatever and open your own trade account. I think if you have a new baby and you want to take advantage of one of those accounts, why can't I go to Schwab and just open the account in my kid's name?
That would be a good question.
Right? I mean, that I don't understand. Like, I don't understand what were they kissing to get that?
Well, remember the, what do they call them? I'm a municipal principal only because we thought we might sell some of these things. Well, we do have some municipal bonds that people bring in. What is it, the 409 stuff? They picked the winner in every state in those things, too. Somebody managed all that.
Yeah, but I guess I don't understand why only two, like you said, in this baby thing, or that why are they picking only two? Why? Why can't I just say, okay, I had a baby, I want to open up these
accounts? I think if we dig into our city upbringing, we know why.
Yes, I hear you. But it's frustrating to me.
Yes.
You know, it's frustrating, right?
Yeah, I mean, I guess.
Because then it gives everyone then it just ignites the argument that everyone's in bed with each other.
Well, so, I mean, if one of my, you know, I have a lot of nice clients here, and if one of them says, boy, I got, you know, 15 grandkids, how about sprinkling the infield? I got to send them to Robinhood?
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Why would you want to send him to Rupp? What if you, what, you know, I my account's at Fidelity for, you know, my kids and my grandchildren, blah, blah, blah. Why should I have to go to Robinhood to open up that account for my grandchild? Or my, why should my daughter have to go to Robinhood to open up an account, that account? That makes no sense to me.
By the way, I know you're at Fidelity and you're happy there, but we can handle $50 million accounts. Just saying.
If I had $50 million, I'd be happy to give it to you.
just saying. We can handle big ones.
Anyway, so listen, I think today it's very interesting, right?
Yeah.
There's 8 hours. We got 8 hours until D-Day, and futures, which had been up overnight, have now turned, you know, have decidedly negative. European markets, though, are still slightly positive. Asian markets mostly closed higher. Taiwan, Japan, Korea, South Korea closed higher. And it's interesting. Overnight futures were higher. Now they turn negative, right? I think there's, quite honestly, I think there's going to be an 11th hour deal. I think there's just this back and forth, you know, to create all this ongoing volatility. But I do think in the end there's going to be an 11th hour deal, because I don't think anyone...
How do you have a deal where every time somebody says they're going to negotiate, the Israelis kill the guy?
Well, because I think it's going to happen this afternoon. Suddenly they're going to come up with, we have the framework of a ceasefire deal, and it's going to, you know, it's going to push it all off. I agree with you. The Israelis have to stop killing every time they come up with a new leader. The guy gets killed. That has to stop. And I think that will stop. And I think there's going to, you know, there's this positioning, this jockeying back and forth. You know, overnight we hit Kargil, and it's a military targets in Kargil. Now Iran threatens more damage to the Gulf states. I think that's all pounding their chest, trying to say, you know, who's got the bigger, right?
Kenny, this reminds me, so you're absolutely right on this. I'm with you. And maybe it's because we still have some sort of faith in our people that we... This reminds me so much of Vietnam, where first we go there to save everybody, then we start bombing the people that we're trying to save.
Yeah, no, I hear you. And listen, I don't as much as I detest the Iranian leadership, the people, you know, the people are just people. They're like you and me, right? And so they're caught in the middle of this. But that's why I think
the people here in Illinois, well, not the people. I listened to a few people they interviewed, right? So who the hell knows how they picked them, but. These are people that when this first happened,
yeah,
they were cheering the fact that the guys up top got taken out, right? And now they're saying, this is way too far. Now they're dropping bombs on my family, for God's sake.
Correct. And so so they have to stop. That's why I think there's going to be a deal, because ultimately what he says, what he threatens is he's going to destroy, you know, send the country back to the Stone Ages. I get it. It's Trump, you know, just Trump being Trump. But A, I don't think it's helpful. B, nor do I think it will happen. I don't think the world would support that. I don't think the Gulf states would support it. I don't think, you know, the allies would support it. I just don't think it would. So I think it's just a lot of hot air, and, you know, and it's Trump being Trump. But that's why I think in the end we're going to get a, you know, you're going to get a deal.
Well, I hope we're not turning into the Israeli leadership where we don't understand that when you kill people, you create more enemies than you do friends.
Agreed. And I think, listen, I think we're getting to that point, right, where if they start blowing the place up, then it's going to get to that point where, you know, we've crossed that line, which is why I don't think it's going to go there.
Well, I think a lot of countries think we've crossed the line. I mean, you know, we actually have a couple people that are, you know, are close to me talking about it's all this big thing against China. China's not bombing seven countries. If you were some guy sitting on some moon someplace, if there's other people in this universe, it's pretty hard to tell who the good guys and the bad guys are here, isn't it?
Yeah, it's getting to that point where it's pretty hard to tell who they are.
Yeah, wait a minute. These guys are the good guys. All they do is bomb people. The other guys, they say, are the bad guys. They're not bombing anybody. And I mean, which doesn't mean that I like the Chinese leadership. I don't. I know what they're trying to. I think I know what they're trying to do. But it seems to me, I mean, if those guys got together, Kenny. The Russians and the Chinese, I don't even know if they're talking, or North Koreans, they've wandered us down a hole here where we're expending all our stuff. We're going broke on this. They're doing the same thing to us what Reagan did to Russia. Where am I wrong here?
You're not. You're not wrong. You're right.
Why are we dumb enough to walk down this road?
Because, you know... the same reason. It's 50 years later, and, you know, people tend to forget, right? History does repeat itself, and that's the part that's so frustrating.
Yeah. So what we're sitting with all the people. We have all kinds of people here. Some people do all their own stuff. The people that I have, Kenny, I'm sitting with, everybody's protected with some puts. They're not snug right up to, you know, because they're real expensive. In other words, if the stock's 200, I don't necessarily have the 200 puts. I might have the 193s or something.
Right.
But everybody's got some protection in case bad stuff happens. And I'm real reluctant to sell any calls because if all of a sudden there's some kind of deal, I do think we get a pop. So that's
100%.
What do you think of my general position? I'm not talking about individual stuff or individual people.
I think you're right. I think you have to be careful. I think you're right. Because if we do get this deal, and I think the announcement comes after the market closes. I don't think it's going to come during the day. I think it's going to come, you know, between 4 and 8 o'clock. You know, I'm saying 6 o'clock. We're going to get this notice of a ceasefire. I think you might get hints of it during the day. And if you do, I think then you're going to see the market surge. So I think you're right.
Well, let's say you're predicting it. I'm really hoping you're right. I'd love to see people stop getting bombed. I'd love to see us stop wasting all his money on bombs and whatever. Right? And I want any more planes down and any of that stuff. Okay, so let's say that happens, all right, and we get this pause and, you know, stuff starts trickling through this. Actually, did you see the article yesterday in CNBC about the guy from the one brokerage firm that somehow rented a ship from the other or a boat from the other side?
No.
He counted. He said the straits aren't closed.
Right.
He actually had 15 ships go through. Now, normally normally it's like 60 or whatever, but still, he goes, some are going through. They all got their transponders off.
Off, right.
Yeah, and whether they're paying anybody or not, I don't know. Whether they got some kind of side deals with Iran that they're letting them through, I don't know any of that stuff. But the fact is, some are getting through, according to this
thing.
Now, what that means, it's, you know, 20 or 25% of what should be going through, but it's not zero. So, okay, so now this goes back up. I don't think once we get our surge for a couple of days, I mean, I see these rates going up. I see these guys talking about this new defense budget. I don't know what the hell they're doing, Kenny, but I see these. When does everybody take a deep breath and say, okay, this is, I won't say over, but subsided enough to where we're not worrying about that anymore? When do we turn and worry about all the rest of the stuff? Because there's plenty left to worry about.
Well, I think that's happened because I think there is plenty to worry about. And I do think that this is, well, I think, you know, you may get the ceasefire deal. It's certainly not going to be over right away. Just because you get a deal, it's not going to be over. We'll be talking about this for months on end because, look, there's been all this, and I put it in my note this morning, there's been all this, you know, kind of residual collateral damage, right, to some of the energy infrastructure in the other Gulf states. It'll be slow to come back. So, you know, this lingering. I don't think oil, while I think oil will come back eventually, even if there's a deal, I don't think we go much below $100 because then they got to get everything working again. They got to bring it online. They got to start to ship it. People have to see that it's actually happening and that it's actually moving through the strait with no problems. And so I think this lingers for a while. I think we're going to be talking about this for a while.
You know, if you're a real, you know, hater of the administration and you look at the winners on this, I tell you what. It's Putin, and people are still thinking that Trump's an asset. And I don't know if I buy that, but it's Putin. It's all his buddy who just bought the refineries in the Gulf. The winners are really and this deal that this who's the son-in-law cut between Saudi the deal he cut between Saudi and the money he's managing in Israel, the Saudi money. I mean, this is really bizarre, Kenny. I mean, I don't know. You read, you listen to stuff. You don't know how much of it's true, but you can't make that one up from the ground up, can you? I mean,
no, you can't. No, you can't. And listen, you know, we talk about this, and whether it's Republicans, whether it's Democrats, whether it's Trump, whether it's Biden, they're all doing it. Come on, who's kidding who? Everyone's in bed with everybody. Everyone's making money off their policies. Everyone's whispering to everybody, right?
Well, Kenny, I talked to a gentleman last night, and to be honest with you, it ruined my evening. But it's Carl and I have been talking about this for a long time, and we've reached the point where this guy actually felt, this is an African-American gentleman, actually felt that because of what he's heard on Newsmax regarding Pelosi stealing,
Yeah.
Everything Trump and his family steals is okay.
Yeah, okay. Well, okay.
But you know what? He's not alone. I say, if I had a watch that had a squirt gun in it, the next time I mentioned, boy, that trade is kind of hard because you never know what's going to come out of Washington. Everybody else seems to get before I do. And I'm, you know, I can see it because I've been doing here forever. If the comment is, what about Pelosi? Do I get to squirt him? What does that have to do with anything?
It doesn't, other than it just shows you how angry and how conflicted people are, right? That because they all do it. Look, you and I could sit here and argue all day long about all of them, all the politicians on both sides.
Well, but that,
not one or the other, they all do it.
But when you get so reach when you reach the
why
point
why it's not illegal, why they're even allowed to be in the market and their families are allowed to be in the market is beyond me, because that's the first thing that should go.
I would say that I don't know anything about Pelosi's stuff. My guess is because she had information in Congress, and by the way, her husband was in the tuna business or something, right? And other businesses.
He was in the private equity business, wasn't he?
But he owned StarKist or someplace, or part of whatever. But I'm saying he had big investments and stuff. Now, it doesn't surprise me that they have a little more information going forward than you or I. Okay, that's not the same as front running a presidential thing 10 minutes from now, in my opinion.
Agreed.
So the idea that the fact that last week when all the futures on the oil and the other stuff was done right before one of Trump's outpeeps, that the fact that Pelosi made money in Congress doesn't give these guys a free ride. And you know what?
Everybody's, of course it doesn't.
But you know what, Kenny? Everybody's convinced it does.
If I get
pulled over 100 miles an hour, and I can say, wait a minute, this Polkari guy was going 110 miles an hour last week. You can't give me a ticket.
Right. It's like two wrongs don't make a right.
And the policeman says, oh, you saw Kenny going 110. Well, okay, go ahead.
You're right.
I mean, but you know, we're reaching that point. And I don't know what that means. I mean, the fact is, people hire me, to be honest, to protect them from that kind of crap in the market by having protection and stuff on. I mean, I like to think they're hiring me because I know what I'm doing. I don't really like the fact that I'm being hired because they need protection. You know what I'm saying? Right now it's very difficult to protect somebody with puts at the price they are and not sell calls to try and get your money back. It's very hard to do that because the put price is high. The VIX is 26, for God's sake. I mean,
the VIX is 26. Yeah, I think it's. I think if the headlines continue to be negative this morning, I think the VIX pushes even higher, which will continue to put pressure on stocks. But then watch how quick it can, because you and I know how quick it can change, right?
Well, what do you think of some of the stocks? I mean, obviously, a firm like ours, we have people with lots of holdings, and a lot of people have these big stocks. What do you in this? You know, the Nvidia and the Microsoft and the. Even Amazon, to a certain extent, and your Oracles. I mean, they look like they're in friggin' death spirals. I mean, are they? Or is it, were they just too high? Is this because of the war they're down? Or is it despite the war? I don't know.
I certainly think that some of it was. I think some of them were certainly stretched. Right, we've talked about this. I think there was some stocks that had gotten out of whack in terms of valuation and prices and all that. But I also think that the war and this conflict and the nervousness, the anxiety has only amplified that nervousness and that move, right? Because clearly they take money out of the big mega cap names because they can do it really quickly, right? You can sell a lot of Apple very quickly. You can raise a lot of money in Amazon very quickly, right? You can't raise it in Bank of Hawaii as quickly, so therefore you sell what you can move quick.
Well, I mean, NVIDIA's down from, you know, did it nail 210, Kenny? It must have been right around 210. Now it's 175. Well, you're talking $35 and 25 billion shares outstanding. That's like serious wealth. But Microsoft is the one that we have some of this for a bunch of different clients. God's sake, Kenny, I'm looking at a 542 number here, not a thing's 370.
I hear you.
I mean,
I hear you, and I think that. But you see, it's names like Microsoft that I think are the huge. I think those are the opportunities. Like Microsoft, while 570 may have been stretched, I agree with you. But it's down. It traded down to 350, which was a long-term kind of area of support, which it bounced off of, by the way.
But it was almost the same number as last. I'm looking here at the chart. You're more of a chart guy than me. It's almost the exact same number as April 25.
Right, and it found support there, and it bounced, and so. But I think you know, you look around, you look at names like that. I think those are screaming opportunities, right, for a long-term investor. I think they're massively screaming opportunities.
Well, when it was up to in the fives, I did a piece. I don't think you were on that day, but I was talking about how expensive they were in terms of price to revenue, and I look at price to revenue in more than I do PE because PE you can. You know,
yeah,
I mean, you can. I won't say you can manipulate it, but depending on how much money you put in investment and those kind of, that number can maneuver around. But the one you really can't cheat on is revenue per share,
right?
And I had the thing up to, you know, I had it 11, you know, was a over 11-12% 11. The shares were like 11 and 12 times revenue, which was right about. So I talk about bad history. It's right about where the Cisco and Oracle and those things were in 2000 before they all crashed. So when something gets more than 10 times revenue, I get very nervous because of the history. And when you see a company like Microsoft, 10, 12, 13 times revenue, where they're so damn big, how could they double, Kenny? I mean, Jesus, what would the world have to look like for Microsoft to double in revenue? I mean they're so big. Now we're flying back down to a more reasonable number because the revenue is probably up. Now the question is, what should the number be for a company that big that's sustainable and growable? I mean, should it be 7, 8, 9? I don't think it's 13, but I don't think it's 2 either.
No, but the market ultimately figures it out, right, where it should be. And so now that's what it's doing, right? It's going through that process of trying to figure out based on everything that's happening around us in terms of the geopolitical drama, the economic drama, what it all means. And so it's a constantly moving target, right? Because nothing stays the same. Well, this conflict is causing energy to remain higher. The inflation picture is very different today than it was 6 months ago, right? What we were all talking about. Right? So the market has to adjust again.
Okay, but you know, I'm never gonna fall for the inflation's up because oil prices are up. I'm going to fall for the inflation's up because we're pouring money in the system.
Well, that too, I agree. But I also think inflation's going to be up because now look what's happened to energy. That's not going to bring inflation down. That's certainly going to add to it. But yes, I agree with you. They keep pushing money into the system, and it causes inflation 100%.
If you're a pure monetarist, which I don't expect you to be. I'm not so sure I'm totally pure anymore. A pure monetarist would tell you, oil can double, and it makes no difference other than in oil, because all it means is the people are going to spend their money in oil. Aren't going to spend it somewhere else, and the other stuff will come down.
Now, well, and that's true, because that will happen, right? Because you'll see the economy start to slow down, because they'll stop, they'll pull back, they're not going to go on trips, or they're not going to buy, you know, the new dress or the new suit, or they're not going to go out to dinner 5 times a week or whatever it is. It will start to cause that, and then those prices will in fact come down. You're right.
I have one quick question, because I know we're running you over here, but the CPI.
Yeah.
Friday, we've had the 2 or 3 horrible PPIs in a row.
Yeah. I suspect it's going to be elevated this Friday when it comes out. I suspect it's going to be up.
Even though the number, if it's bad, the guy will get fired. I don't see how you hide from this one.
No, you can't hide from this one. And the market's already expecting it to be up. The question is going to be, is it going to be worse than even the elevated expectation? That's going to be the key.
I have it. Expectations on the one calendar I look at, they got it coming in at a full percent.
Yeah, I hear you. I think Bloomberg has it at 3.4%.
No, I'm talking about the month itself.
The month itself. 1%. Oh, yeah, I have to look. I have to look and see what Bloomberg has.
You know, Market Watch has it at 1%, which, you know, if you multiply it by 12 is 12.
That's a huge day. It's not going to be pretty, for sure, 100%.
Interesting to see what the closeted boys, and I use that term intentionally, come out with the PCE. Because, I mean, nobody can check the PCE. Where does it even come from?
The closeted boys. Oh, my God.
Well, I mean, what if somebody opens up the bathroom door and hands somebody a number? I mean, where does that even come from?
All right, listen, I got to go. All right. I got to go on that note.
See.
Goodbye.
Have a good one. S&P futures down 37, NASDAQ futures down 181. Do we have Professor Hale?
Yep, I'm here.
How are you, bud?
Doing well.
Just I read your stuff the other day, and I've been pushing you this morning because I'm starting to understand more where you're coming from, and I think it makes a lot of sense.
The thing that was presented at the Austrian Economic Association.
Wait, you got to give me a picture of those guys.
Yeah, I should have. Yeah,
I want you to take those guys down to the bar, stand at the bar, and take a picture. I can't imagine how funny that picture would be.
They're an interesting group. Most of them, I think half of them are probably from Spain or
How many of them have beards?
There weren't too many. I think the younger guys seem mostly from Spain and parts of Europe or
How many of checkered sport coats?
In their 20s that recently graduated probably from a southern university. There was a young guy that I was talking to the first night of the conference. He was from Buffalo, New York. The funny thing is, I don't drink anymore, and I used to drink, you know, in the Navy, and my buddies would get really drunk.
You had a cocktail, with us over at the series.
Yeah. Well, one.
Yeah.
Yeah, just one. But, you know, and the next morning you're standing watch, you had too many the previous night, and you're buddies had too much the previous night, and there's a certain odor that smell on people who are hungover. There were actually three or four dudes that were so hungover. I think they were Europeans too. You could smell it, man.
Oh yeah,
and they were probably drinking some pretty heavy stuff. Not everybody. I think it was like I smelled like three or four guys that, man, they looked pretty rough. And they smelled like it was just oozing out of their pores.
Well, you know, when I asked you that, the guys from, I think it was George Stigler, Nobel Prize winner, one day was talking about professors. He was a funny guy. He goes, one day, he goes, look at professors. He goes, you know, I know an awful lot about economics, I think. And I know something about government and economics, you know, how governments work. He goes, but look at us as a group. He goes, look at why do we all have patches on the elbows of our sport coats? And he goes, go out and look at our cars. Nobody else buys a car like that. They're all junk. Yeah. he got a bit of a 20-minute rant about economic professors in general.
We're an odd group. At the business school, the economists are most likely to drive a Hyundai or just...
In those days, it was like a Toyota or some of the first Toyota coming over here.
Yeah,
or something.
I'm driving around a 2008 Cobalt because I can fix it, and I don't want to buy a new car where I had to take it to the shop to replace an alternator, and they had to pull the engine. So I drive in a 2008 Cobalt that gets 35 miles a gallon. A lot of the econ professors are driving around pretty modest vehicles, but the other business professors, wow, they drive some snappy cars, and they walk around with really nice suits, and the economists, we look
that's
like
what I'm saying the
homeless.
economic guys looked a lot different because I took like half my classes in the economics school.
We look like we're homeless.
Yeah the business guys always look good. They all got the nice suits. Every one of the economics guys had the sport coat with the patch on his elbows. Anyway, so
well, we get that from the from the thrift stores, right?
You know, I have been a huge proponent of monetary policy since my Milton Friedman days, but I've never. This is the first time, and I'm going to be honest with you. I didn't really, when you first started talking about this, I thought it was just something that sort of happened, but now that, by the way, the stuff you're writing for these people is getting better and better and easier to understand. Is I think you're zeroing in on it more.
Yeah, when I first wrote that article back in December. I had to fit a lot into an article that's supposed to be 1,200 words. And it's really hard to do that because you have to define these terms and you have to identify trends. And there are about four or five major themes that it's trying to push in this article. And it's really hard to do that in 1,200 words. And I think it ended up being like 1,500 to 1,800 words.
Well, people have listened to me for however long we've been at, 15 years, 16 years. Know that I've always been ragging totally about how Feds, over that whole period of time, well, not all of it, but most of the time, were lowering interest rates, and yet the lowering of rates never made it to maybe even the upper middle class, let alone the lower. I mean, it
did. Well, we've been talking about this. We've been talking about this for probably 8 years about how there is a recession amongst the bottom roughly 80% of Americans for probably 10 or 15 years or more. People at the top reading the news copy, or people in D.C. on K Street or Wall Street, they're doing great. Hollywood's doing great. But it's the 80% of the population, the lower part of the distribution, who probably have been living through a recession for multiple years.
Well, but I always,
I think this is the reason why.
But I always thought, you know, I saw it happening, the difference in the banking and those other kinds of things. I could sit here and rattle off the differences I saw, how the credit card rates are actually going up as interest rates, as the Fed rate went from 5 to 1, which means everything should have gone down. Credit cards rate actually went up. I never was able to put two and two together in a way that the system was actually doing that like you're doing right now. So I'm amazingly grateful to you for doing this.
Yeah.
So explain exactly, don't go off into Austrian, you know, economics lands, but what exactly, why is it that when the Fed, if they were to say we're dropping rates from 3 to 1, it's never going to get to you?
I think it has to do with this tool it got in 2008. And I think they're using it to keep, if they didn't have this tool, then banks would lend all this money out in every different sector of the economy. But they have this tool, the Fed has this tool called interest on reserves. And so when the Fed purchases a bunch of treasuries during a crisis, like a bank is about to go under and they go out and they just flood the economy with new money. Well, they buy up a bunch of debt. But
they go out and buy $200 million of Fed paper on the open market today, is what you're talking about.
Yeah. They go out there and they buy this stuff. When they buy it, the banks take that money and they can either lend it out or they can keep it at the Fed. If there's no interest on reserves, they would lend it out more than likely. But they don't lend it out. They keep it at the Fed because they're literally lending it to the Fed at an interest rate that's not that bad. I mean,
it's almost too high.
They're not taking a risk.
Well, it's way better than what they're paying. That's the other part that's weird, though, Hal. And I'm wondering,
there's no risk adjustment to it other than inflation.
But here's what one of these days, I think you're going to surprise me yet again, and you're going to make the connection between the Fed is paying more than the banks are paying for deposits.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is really bleeped up. That's really bleeped up. Where you and I could start a bank today and have people come in there, and you know, if we're a little storefront if we have the nice people in there, if we have a storefront, say right by there's some of these on the south side, right where the Rock Island stops, say, and you walk in, anybody can. I mean, if we had $3 million, we could open up a bank like that, but we're not going to give out loans or anything. We're not going to have a loan department, so we're going to have people that come in and their checking accounts. We're not going to be paying them anything. Now there's some cost of a checking account. But maybe we'll pay somebody 0.5% or 1% on money that's kind of a blended rate, and we're turning around and we're going to lend it back to the Fed at 3. We can actually be in business just doing that, and never give a loan, a car loan, anything to anybody, right?
Yeah.
But I mean, that never could happen.
Inflation. But that we'd have to have a higher return because inflation is running higher than.
Okay, but I'm saying as long as we're getting the money for 0.5%.
True. True. The net interest margin is 2.
Yeah, I think we can stay. If we only have 4 or 5 people working for us, we can stay in business doing that. We don't have to go out and get any loans. Plus somebody's going to come by. The bigger banks come by with a package of loans, and they'll say, "Hal, maybe you're our loan officer. Hal, we got this one that's paying 6%. We got 48 big buildings in here. You can buy into this one if you want. Without us having to go out and put a mortgage on a quote building."
Yeah.
So that's the kind of thing that would keep up in business. All we have to do is suck people's money in and not pay them, which is what people are doing, right?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And I think none of this works as it has been working without the Fed paying interest on reserves. And that's a relatively new thing.
Well, it's also nothing work. It doesn't work like this unless the Fed is part of the design of the system, which is bizarre. Yeah.
Well, what makes it even worse is how they zeroed the reserve requirement in 2020. In March, they used the COVID, you know, shutdown. Now, I'm not saying anything nefarious, but it's really weird. I don't like coincidences. I know rare things happen.
Are you an NCIS, guy? Gibbs, there is no such thing as a coincidence.
Well, I like what the writer told Elaine in Seinfeld. There are either coincidences or no coincidences. There aren't big coincidences. God.
Well, you know, just as a little bit of history, there's what you're talking about. Back in 1979, when my mom was meticulous at it, would go if there was a CD that was paying like 14, she, you know, and her 13 became, you know, due in one place, she'd motor her behind down the block and put it in the one that was 14. There's no way that place was turning around and giving it to the Fed at 16. They actually had to go out and get a you know, to lend that money or do something with it. They better, because there's no way they could just turn around and do that.
What was the maturity on those kind of CDs back then?
90 days?
6 months?
6 months, a year.
Okay.
Because they would
roll over.
Yeah.
And then she'd be hunting for the next time deposit.
Well, you know, the weird part is, I mean, talk about a split in the yield curve. I'm going to say, Hal, Robin, who used to be on the show before she got run over by a car, horrible day for the show, and me.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Almost 2.5 years ago. I miss her to this day. She's a good friend.
In Chicago?
In her home in New Jersey, walking in a pedestrian neighborhood. She went out for a walk. Somebody whacked her.
Wow.
And anyway, she got her top tick at Continental Bank, I think, was 15 and a half or 16 on a six-month CD. Now, the highest, the bond, the 30-year bond, it wasn't so much 10-year back then, but the 30-year bond traded a lot, right? Matter of fact, it traded tremendously. And I think you know this, but the listeners, you sit there and say, okay, the 30-year bond's trading, what the hell is that? There is actually one bond that is the pegged 30-year bond. And because out of all the different, whenever the Fed goes out, the coupon rate could be 9%, but when a bond goes out, it never goes out at exactly 9%. It goes out at a market rate. It's going to go out at 8.98 or 9.02 or something. So, but there's a coupon rate. So when you talk about if you're trading the 30-year bond, 100's parity where that particular bond is, and if it's trading under that, obviously the market interest rate is higher, and if it's trading over that, the market rate's lower. So the bond people were trading back in 1981. Was an 8.5% bond, Hale. And the price of the bond got down to, I think the low tick was 66, which means your market rate, I'm going to guess, was like 12.75.
Yeah.
So the highest the 30-year ever got was maybe 12.5, 12.75, where the six-month, I think, was pushing 16. Mm. So you had a... Because people felt over the next 5 or 6 years, somebody's going to fix this crap, or else we're doomed. Yeah. I mean, so right? I mean, it's like now oil futures. You know, the current spot might be 130, but the future out 5 years is going to be back to 70, right? Because people figure somewhere in the next 5 years, the world's going to straighten up, maybe. But that's the opinion, right? So that's why your futures always.
Yeah, my whole plan to refinance our mortgage in North Carolina. With a VA loan, which you can do every 6 months as long as interest rates come down 100 basis points. That plan has been blown up by this whole war. So.
And the VA stuff, I suppose I could ask Nancy this, but do you got to go through the whole routine, the new appraisal?
Well, the refi thing is pretty simple, and it's really low cost. And every 6 months, and I was planning to do this.
No new survey, no new appraisal, none of that crap?
No, just it's pretty quick. What it does is you can refi. And you can get that. You can refi every 6 months as long as interest rates are like one percentage point lower than what you're currently paying. It was headed that direction until the end of February when, you know.
Nancy says for a regular person, you need a 1.25%, 1.5%, because there's expenses. It is a mortgage involved, and it's got to be that much lower or else it's not worth the expenses. But you guys probably don't have as many expenses, so the break even's probably one.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, I was going to do that, but now I got to probably put it off until hopefully November.
Well, you know,
wait a year.
Timing is everything. One of the gentlemen used to help us on the show, he bought a house in Glen Ellen. God, I've known the guy forever. I'll bet he bought the house 20 years ago, and he did something that everybody says don't ever do. He got a flex rate, or what do you call those things? One where it moves up and down with LIBOR.
Mm.
He was there 12 years, and all it did was go down.
Wow.
But now they don't use LIBOR. And what do they use? Is LIBOR even around? Because everybody's cheating on LIBOR, right?
You haven't heard anybody say LIBOR in a long time. I think the last time I heard it maybe was 5 years ago.
I think they bagged it because somebody was rigging it. But they got, but there's a new one that gets you kind of the same place. The LIBOR was what? London Interbank something something rate. It was
wasn't it kind of the analogy analogous to the federal funds rate?
Yeah, it was the bank. It was now why we ever used the London one and not the one here? I never could figure that out. Did you?
Yeah.
Anyway, S&P futures up down 24, NASDAQ futures down 124. We're waiting all day to see whether we're going further on the war, or we got a ceasefire or something. What do you say we got a break here, Hal, because we haven't done one yet, and we come back and talk more, bud. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm talking about Ricky on the board. S&P futures down 25. NASDAQ futures down 128. We've kind of been around here. We've been as much as down 35. All kinds of crazy stuff here when I go through these numbers. And I'm going to quiz Hal when we're done because, you know, you listen to our president, and some of it I think is, you know, the art of the deal, and some of it is just plain BS. But, you know, it's hard to tell which is which. But anyway, S&P futures down 25, NASDAQ futures down 126, Dow futures down 158. Individual stocks, the Dow is skewed to the upside here, but United Health, they got some deal with the government where they're going to get paid more on their Medicare stuff. So it's up 9, it's up almost 7%. All your health stocks are up. The only other stock in the Dow that's up is Chevron. And that's what I kind of want to get to when I get through these stocks, because it's unclear to me why it's happening. Anyway, DAX down 102.5%, FTSE down 16, only 0.2%. CAC Rand's actually up 12, so down to somewhat steady over in Europe. We're in Asia, Nikkei up 15, call that flat. Hang Seng down 177.7%. Shanghai up 10.2%. Asia Pacific markets trade mixed as investors assess Trump's hardened rhetoric on an Iran war. You know, when you go from saving people to bombing them, it just reminds me so much of Vietnam, and I don't want to talk about it, even though I am. The Bund is up 3 basis points, 303. Our interest rates are 10 years unchanged at 4.34. Japan, 2.4. UK is 4.86. So they're all heightened from where they were. Well, this is what's weird. West Texas is up 273 to 115. Brent is up 92 to 110. Up until 3-4 days ago, Brent has been higher than West Texas. And we had a president come out and say, we don't need their oil. They should open the strait. It's all about them. We don't need it, blah, blah, blah. Well, ever since he said that, our oil has run higher than the world price. And I'm going to get Hal's opinion on that because something's squirrely there. Something is real squirrely there. Our Bob's up to 332. So we had probably a buck and a quarter to that, at least. In a couple weeks from now, if nothing good happens, we're probably talking, gas in the high fours, easy. Gold, up 490, but still way down from where it was. 4689 was up to 5100. Silver down 49 cents. You would think there would be a rush to gold and silver. There isn't. Part of that is because the dollar's gone up. Crypto, you would think that might be going the same way as gold and silver, but it's not. It's down today, 1300, but still 68,000. Foreign exchange, and this has been kind of key. A dollar high. We're down to 115.6 on the euro and 132.5. Those are down about 2.5% from when this all started. That's a lot of stuff, Ricky. What do you have for us, Traffic Weather Sports?
Good morning, Chief. It's currently 7:32 a.m. here in Chicago. We're looking at 30 degrees right now with a high of 37. Colder with more clouds than sun, yet some sun nonetheless. Tonight with increasing clouds and a shower toward dawn and a low of 33 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 65 degrees right now with a high of 94. Bright sun and very hot, so stay hydrated and in the shade. Tonight will be clear with a low of 67 degrees. Traffic in Chicago, Edens is clear. Kennedy inbound has some heavy traffic starting from Evergreen Park Road and getting slower as we get closer to the city. Heavy traffic in Eisenhower inbound from the ramp from US 45 North. Harlem to Cicero is backed up on Stevenson North. And finally, Dan Ryan is backed up from 103rd Street. There is a concert at United Center at 8 p.m. and a Sox game at Wakefield at 2:10 p.m. So expect some traffic during those times. Let's talk sports real quick. For the MLB, the Cubs lose to Rays yesterday 6-4. We got Orioles beating White Sox as well 2-1. And today we got back-to-back games. Cubs at Rays 5:40 p.m. Orioles at White Sox 2:10 p.m. and Diamondbacks at Mets at 3:10 p.m. Yesterday, the Blackhawks lose to Sharks 3-2. For the NBA, we got Bulls at Wizards today at 6 p.m. and Rockets at Suns at 10 p.m. Finally, for the NCAA men's basketball, yesterday Michigan beats UConn 69-63 and take the title for the first time in 37 years. Back over to you, Chief.
We should have a pool. How much did Joel have on the game? He was there. I know you're a
try. Well, Joel seems like a guy that. I don't know if he seems like a guy that's going to put money on a game.
No, I don't think so much. But he really loves Michigan sports. Good for him. And
I don't think investors going to.
He is not a fair.
I think they're going to stay away from trades where they got a lot wrapped up in it emotionally. So I don't see him doing it.
My mother, I talk about her more than I should. I know, but she was a terrific poker player, very good bridge player. And she taught me how to play poker when I was like four, right? So, anyway, when the Notre Dame and the Bears started playing, I get old enough where I could bet. She goes, "I've taught you how to gamble. I sure hope you're not dumb enough to bet on a team that you care about." She goes, "You can never bet on something where you have somewhat of an interest."
Yeah.
Anyway, no, I think Joel.
Especially if you're a kid, because you have these. Rose-colored glasses, right?
Yep,
You know, you don't think they can fail. And, you know, we're talking about 18, 19-year-old kids who are kids. And, you know, they're not robots.
I got a quick Notre Dame story where somebody wasn't really happy with them. We used to go to Vegas a lot before I was a trader, right? But you could go. People say, "Oh, man, why is this guy going out to Vegas?" Hell, it was a different world. We used to go... When they stopped having the regulated airlines, the first thing they did was have these charters.
I remember the charters.
Okay, but now people are going to think I'm coming from the dark ages or the light enlightened ages.
Yeah.
The deal was with the charter, Ricky, you'll love this. You could buy a charter, which is cheaper, but if you didn't go, you couldn't get your money back, which was weird. So there was an outfit here in Chicago that essentially...
Did JetBlue start as a charter company?
No, it was long before JetBlue.
I thought they might have started as a charter company.
This was regular airlines that you get on an old plane. We were always on like a DC-8 or something. What time we were even on a 707?
Was it like snakes on the plane?
Well, we were on a 707. But here was the deal: you'd call this outfit 1-800 Soda Pop, and they dealt with all the wholesale on these things. The people that left, so you could call them up on a Monday, and if you're willing to leave on a Thursday, it was like $150. For like a crummy hotel, and like 170 for a better one, 190 for maybe.
And that made it even funner.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, the first place we stayed, God, what a dump the place was. It was called the Flamingo Capri. It's where they ended up putting up another place, and now that place is down or whatever. But it's right next to the Flamingo. It was this crummy little motel. And the thing was sitting on it was a dry wash that went through the parking lot. So there was these yellow lines. Where they said you can't park your car here, and there were like three rooms in the downstairs that were missing because that's where the water would go. Anyway, but I mean, it was, you know, if you wanted to stay at Caesars, it might have been $219. We're talking about flights out, flight back, hotels, and all the booze on the plane on the way out. But the weird part was there was no security, right?
Yeah,
you check your bag.
It's like Will's Up, that airline.
You check your bag at O'Hare. And you went and immediately started drinking. Get on a plane. And, of course, it's open booze all the way out there. And then they're playing. Everybody's throwing, you know, your name on $5. And they're doing that all the way out there. And when a thing lands, you know, everybody's cheering. And you go right to gamble and eat. They brought the luggage to your room.
Wow.
And on Sunday morning, they'd come by at 10:30, grab your luggage, and you didn't see it again until you walked out of it. You could go to brunch, gamble.
Yeah,
for
you had to pack your luggage the day before because you might have a pretty epic night.
Well, yes. But, I mean, you found it. There was talk about comparing that to today's travel.
Yeah,
good Lord. Anyway, this guy, you know, I used to be kind of a half-ass counter at blackjack. Good enough to protect myself and, you know, not get clobbered, but not enough to, you know, to be. Plus, it's a lot of work. And you're going out there to have a good time. So, you know, you always managed at that time. I don't know how I always found myself at a blackjack table with, like, a gorgeous dealer. It just sort of happened, Al. I mean, I don't know how that happened, but.
Well, it's your movie star good looks. Central casting.
I could sit anywhere. Anyway, I'd sit down. So I'm sitting there, and this guy next to me, he's nervous as all get out, right? And he went to the bathroom, and we held on to the game until, this is Caesars, until he came back. And I said, by the way, you must know this guy. I mean, me making small talk to a good-looking girl, imagine that. And she goes, oh, yeah, he's a good guy. And I said, yeah, you know, he seems a little nervous, like he's a, you know, long-tailed cat in a room full of rocking chairs. And she goes, well, he is. And I go, why? Well, they had this bet. You put down $5, and you pick 15 games, right? And, you know, this is with the odds, so, you know, with the points. So the odds of you winning are like, you know, zero. The guy had the first 13 in. Now, if you had 14 in, I would hope our listeners, I know you know this, you'd call home, you'd borrow everything you possibly could. I think the thing paid like $500,000 or some number.
Wow.
And, you know, 250, some, you know, back in 1970 something, some egregious amount of dough, right? So, but with two, you can't. But a one, you find out all the money you possibly could, and if you got the same spread, if you put all the money you could on the other one, right? Because then you're essentially hedging yourself. I hope people know what I'm talking about here. So, in other words, if you bet two teams on a parlay and you get the first one in, and you get the same odds, if you want to hedge yourself, you then go bet against yourself, and you're going to win one of the two, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so. But with two games left, you can't do that, especially if they're going off at the same time. So he had Oklahoma and the Irish. Oklahoma comes in like a song, so now he's got 14. He bet the Irish they were like 28-point favorites against Air Force, and they only won by like 25. So he lost the last game. So the guy must have been suicidal at this point. So me, being the you know, curious dude that I am, I walk down to the cashier at Caesars, and I go, hey, just out of curiosity, that bet, this guy like almost won. He goes, yeah, we've had a few of those. I go, how many people win a year? He goes, we've been doing it for 10 years. Nobody's ever won.
Wow. Yeah.
You know, it's like having 15 games in the NCAA. I mean,
if you watch enough basketball or football and you're betting on the spread, you got a coach that wants to hang a big number on somebody and impress voters, and you got another coach that is just, you know, putting the third team in. That last minute of a blowout, and you're on that margin.
Yep.
It's just too unpredictable.
Too unpredictable. The only people I knew.
You know, I stay away from that. I mean, I'm not going to bet on games that involves 18 to 20-year-old kids. I'm just not going to. Because their kids are not robots. And pros, if pros can choke, then college kids can too.
Yeah.
So I'm just not putting money on those.
The
kind
only
of things.
The one group, and these guys, half of them I think are probably dead. They were old then. They had a group in the Tripoli that were big time gamblers, but they were really into it. Where they had people in Vegas put the bets down there, and they'd get the best money, the best line, the whole bit, and they would, their edge, for lack of a better term, was in they knew a lot of. The difference between college and pro, well, now pro is a little weird too, but is you don't get any injury reports in college. Where pros, they tell you if this guy's playing, not playing, you know, what is, if he's probable, he's 75% chance of playing, questionable is 50% or whatever. Those things all have percentages to them. And so you get this injury list all week, and then they update it. But in college, there is no such thing.
Yeah.
So these guys' edge was to know enough coaches and know enough people in the business – to know when people were not playing on certain teams. So if there was a game on a Saturday, you know, Slippery Rock playing Sidewash or somebody, and you knew that three of the best defensive players on each team were out, they would bet the over. Hmm. Not, you know, just because there's nobody to tackle anybody, right? So they would use their knowledge of the injuries not to pick a winner. Well, they might do that too. If one team has three of their best players out and nobody knew about it, you might bet against that team. But they would use it a lot for the over-unders. Thinking if defensive players are hurt, you want to take the over, and if offensive players are hurt, you take the under. And for a period of several years, those guys were up. I mean, I'm not saying huge, but they were up, which is pretty hard to do. Just saying.
Well, do you like, I mean, just take basketball, for example. The spread might be 8. The team that's up, that's supposed to win by 8, is leading by 5, right? There's a minute left. Is the other team going to foul and try to get back into it, or are they just going to relent and just give it up, right? Yeah. And then if they decide to play it out and foul, the team that is up 5, they could be hitting their free throws, or they could maybe hit one or two of them every time they get fouled, and the game gets closer. What I've observed over time.
Right, but you're to a certain extent, you're showing your age. Because like me, you're going to bet the game, okay? Every time the basket scores, you can bet that minute now, and you have a different point spread.
Yeah.
It used to be where people
I'm just talking about just the game in general.
I know, but I mean, a lot of your crazy spread. Guys.
Yeah, you took the point spread, you took the points, you put down a $1,000 bet, and in the last minute, if it's close, the team that's down can foul or just kind of like
right, but
knowledge they lost.
Okay, but you're assuming that the people on the court even know the spread is.
They don't know what the spread
is. Well, but I mean, they used to, okay, if you went into the game. But now, for a long period of time, the guys who were considered the cool, smart guys, I mean, say the Bulls are playing somebody and they're 20-point dogs. Well, at halftime, they're down 40. They had these halftime bets where the Bulls might actually be favored in the second half because the other guys are going to rest everybody.
Yeah.
So the for a long time, the smart people thought they would only make their bets at halftime. Well, now you can bet them. You can do it anytime you want.
Well, you can bet on whether the guy's socks are going to be hanging down or pulled up. You know,
I think some of the stuff now you can get paid.
Yeah.
In other words, if you bet if the Bulls are 10-point dogs, right, and all of a sudden you bet the Bulls and say they're up miraculously 15 points, I think you can take a small winner right then if you want.
Yeah.
You don't have to wait till the end of the game and get, you know, your whatever your 50-50 bet, or it's 110 to 100 bet.
You know how I teach this in my stats class? I create this scenario where I got a 500-person classroom. And I say, if I had a 500-person classroom, I'd have everybody bring in a quarter, and I'd have everybody stand up, and I'd have everybody flip the coin. If you got a heads, you stayed standing. If you got tails, you sat down. Well, after about 15 rounds, there could be one guy that got 15 heads in a row. And you say, wow, look at that. 15 heads in a row is possible. And then I'd say, well, how many people are sitting down? So we only really hear about the guy that wins it all
right
in the lottery. We don't hear about all the people who lost.
Because you all you got to do is look in your own pocket to find that guy.
But, you know, there'll be people like saying, hey, a guy in my neighborhood won last week, you know, in Brooklyn. We were living there. And I'm like, well, how many people in Brooklyn lost? If they reported the names of everybody who lost at lottery instead of reporting on the guy who won, nobody ever played the lottery.
Because
they would realize that, you know, the news media is going to blow up this event to make it look like anybody can win. I don't know why they do that, but you know
what's even weirder
is in the news media.
If the one prize goes to like $30 billion or something, which nobody really needs, all the smaller prizes don't get any bigger.
Yeah.
Hey, I got as we're talking on Stocks and Jacks here about betting and some of the things about Vegas and so forth, what it kind of leads into is option pricing. You know, it's kind of where I'm going with this. An option pricing theory. And for those that don't know, I spent a lot of time when I was in school when people were putting these models together. Matter of fact, the Black Scholes model, I think I had a class with Fisher Black, actually. No, I had a class with Myron Scholes, the stock market. He's a good guy, good teacher. This was all happening when I was in grad school. And there was always some assumptions, Hal. Whenever you have assumptions, you know, what, you make an ass out of you and an ass out of me, right? Well, the assumptions always were there's several variables when you have an option, okay? So if you got a piece of, and this was all in land long before it was on stock. If you had a piece of property, first thing you have to know is what's today's price, right? That's the first thing you got to know. What is the price, like a stock? What, you know, IBM is trading $244.11. That's the first thing you have to know, right? So now we're going to pick, let's say, what is the option going to be to buy IBM stock at $250 instead of $245.11? Okay, we know the current price. What's the next thing you have to know? Whoa, how long is this option for? Is it for 20 minutes? Is it for 20 years? Somewhere in the middle, right? I don't know how much of this you've gone through. I'm sure some. And then you say, okay, well, now we're going to say it's a 2-month option. So now I have the ability to buy IBM at $250 from this mo, or this piece of property, wherever it is, from now until June 8th, or whatever the hell today is, June 7th. Okay, so now we know that. What's the next thing we have to know? We have to make some sort of a stab at the interest rate. Now, why is that? Well, if I buy IBM at $245, hoping it goes up, I got to pay interest, and I margin it one way or the other, whether it's implied margin or other, I need to pay interest on the $245. Or if I buy the option, I don't have to pay that interest. All right, so the higher the interest goes, the more the option should cost, because the other trade would be to buy the stock. So interest has been so low for a long period of time that nobody pays any attention to it. But the interest ever went back up. It's part of why call options go up with interest and put options go down. And I'll save that for another day. So now all of a sudden, but now there's one final thing, right? Carl, what else? What's the oomph in IBM? I mean, is IBM a stock that moves around a lot? Is it a stock that might be 300 at the end of the year? Why would it be 300? It's been 245 exactly for 2 years. What would make it move? So there's something else. You know, what was it? And people would say the first iteration was expectations of future values of IBM, whatever the hell that meant. And somebody smart with a calculator, a guy like Hal, would say, wait a minute. All that stuff is already in the stock price, right? If somebody thought the stock was going to be 400 a year from now, it sure as hell wouldn't be trading at 245, correct?
Yeah, exactly.
So it's in the stock price. So then somebody decided, Black and Scholes, here's what we're going to use. We're going to use something called the volatility of how volatile the stock has been in the past and people's estimate in the future. We're going to use the annualized standard deviation of the stock and call that volatility. And that's what the trick variable is in all these models. Now, what does the trick variable assume? They assume a steady flow of information that one day is like every other, right? So now that immediately your hair is going to go up on the back of your neck and say, well, that's not true. I mean, first of all, there's earnings dates, right? Four times a year, unless Trump makes it two. Four times a year. Those are big announcements. Those aren't a day like every other day, are they? No. Now, today is not a day like every other day.
Exactly, yeah.
So, I mean, what is the news? The news could be we're at war, the world's safe. That's an interesting piece of news. You don't get that any other day, do you? So now today, that's why you have the volatility is high, because today is just not a regular day, correct? So I'm just kind of going through this because I don't think people that trade stuff, they listen to these terms and they don't even know what they are. You know, and I think if you're going to trade it, at least if you're on Stocks and Jacks, and the fact
I think Kenny mentioned this. If you think it's a game and you're just, I mean, go to Vegas instead, right?
Yeah,
that's one reason why these economic models. One thing I learned about them is a good math theorem is one with minimal assumptions. The economic theorems that are taught in PhD programs have thousands and thousands of assumptions, and we evoke the phrase ceteris paribus, which is there is no way anything is it ceteris is not paribus, not even from 1 minute to the next. So the economic theories that are generated with these mathematical models are so flawed because there's so many assumptions embedded in them. And the worst of the assumptions that are just assumed away is the fact that individuals 10 times a day, maybe 100 times a day, are constantly making sink or swim decisions. When you're driving your car, you're making a sink or swim decision by how much you're going to pay attention or if you're going to look at your phone. You're constantly making these sink or swim decisions, and sticks and stones don't make those kinds of decisions.
No.
They either float or they sink. So these economic theories are flawed. And I think the funny thing about the Black and Scholes model is I think about a year after they got the Nobel Prize for it, the model failed miserably, and I think the Nobel Prize committee was like thinking, man, I wish we could pull
that one back. What do you mean by failed miserably? It never failed, and what it was, if you knew what it was calculating, it never failed.
Yeah, but it didn't perform well, I think, and I'm trying to remember this. It didn't perform well in the late 1990s because of global market. And I'm trying to remember how it worked because it's been a while, but it didn't anticipate or model, I think, the Asian crisis.
But why would anybody ever expect after what I just told you?
I know,
you,
but what I'm saying is it didn't work very well for like a year. The year after they won the prize, something happened that I forget, where it kind of collapsed. And people, I think it was probably the financial crisis. Not the financial crisis, but
I'm saying
dot-com bubble or something.
But I gave a brief description. But you know what, Hal? It wasn't that brief. That's what it's never going to let you know that an asteroid is going to hit New York.
Yeah.
It was never designed to do that.
No, it's not.
No, huh? Yeah. But I'll tell you, after years and years, and when I learned all this from a guy named Marty O'Connell, who's still alive, a brilliant man, went to Notre Dame, got his master's at... Hell, he had his law degree at Stanford and his master's at, it wasn't Harvard, but I didn't talk about a brilliant guy. But what happened after years of empirical evidence? Okay, what the big hang up over time now has been in the Black-Scholes model is it's not a log normal curve. The sides are fatter. Picture in your mind a normal curve. I think most people can do that, and you know what it looks like. Okay, but first of all, this is log normal because it can't go below zero. But say it's a normal curve. The middle of the curve is higher, and the tails are fatter, which means there is way more 3s times v moves than you would expect, and there's way more really dull days up until the last couple of years than you would expect. So there's more days where nothing happens, and there's more days where a boatload happens, and the kind of the ones in the middle are scrunched. Plus, it never really was able to value the puts properly, because in high interest rate environments, and I know I'm going to talk about, like, I'm a Greek here, because in high interest rate environments, sometimes it's if you have an in-the-money put, and the interest rate's high enough, it's worth it for you to exercise that put, because now you'll get short stock interest on your short stock. And I know I just blew away half the people here, but one of these days when we have time with Hal, because he's interested, we'll go through that. But now, interest rates are so low, nobody even knows what short stock interest is, right? So but the model has its weaknesses, but that doesn't mean... It means how you're supposed to know the weaknesses, right?
Yeah.
You don't blame the model. You just know what they are.
Yeah.
So
I think people get encouraged by the fact that maybe the model just works great for most, because the Fed's job is to create inflation, which creates long asset bubbles, and anybody can make money when the Fed is being easy for 10 years straight. The market's going to go up, right? It's the rare occasions where the Fed decides, hey, we went too far, inflation got out of control, we're going to tighten, and then we have a stock market crash.
Yep.
So in the age of the Fed, is it the model? Or is the Fed creating inflation where people just make money And they don't have to be very smart to make money in a stock market where the Fed is just inflating.
I'll say that if you wanted to value, you know, a piece of property or IBM stock a year from now, and you knew kind of what the interest rate and stuff was, and knew IBM's pattern in the past, and it's, you know, let's hope it's not going to take over in the next 12 months, or maybe if you own the stock, you want to be taken over. The market model is very accurate on that. Okay, but yeah. How exactly would any model tell you that if, let's say, you know, expiration's at 3 o'clock? What if Trump was going to say, bomb the hell out of him, or the war's over at 2:30? Name me a model that can give you some sort of.
Oh, it's not going to build a. Yeah, I mean,
there's no way. It's like earnings. That's when you sit there and go, okay, the stock's $300. How far can this thing go if the earnings are good or bad? You don't have to be good or bad. Just if they're more or less than people expect, you might say. Can go $30. Well, then you can anticipate, if that's what the world thinks, that the straddle, the 300 straddle, the call and the put's going to be $30. So at that point, it's not about the model. It's about people making a judgment of, okay, what's the number going to be here? Hey, I got a question for you. I know you're a serious Trumper dude.
I'm not a Trumper dude.
Okay, well,
I'm not a DNCer. I'm not a GOPer.
I know you're okay, but now we have Vice President Vance. Is now going to Hungary today to campaign for the right winger over there who's behind in the polls. First of all, is that something we should be doing? And secondly, given Trump's around the world opinion of him, is he helping or hurting this guy?
Well, I don't think we should be involved in any foreign election. And I don't care if it's a Democrat
or a Republican.
I just don't think we should be doing that. Let other people figure it out. Their own internal affairs. We shouldn't be involving ourselves in these foreign wars. And, you know, we have no business telling other countries how to run their business because, frankly, we can't even run our ship.
Yeah, we're giving advice and people looking at you and saying,
we can't
run
our ship. Yeah, we have a $39 trillion debt. The Defense Department budget, they want it to be $1.5 trillion.
Yeah.
And I'm like thinking, no, we can't be doing this stuff. And the reason why we're this irresponsible is because the Federal Reserve is going to paper over anything Congress, whether it's run by Democrats or Republicans, do.
They're going to try.
Yeah. So there's no reason for us to be involved in these foreign.
Now, wait a minute. And Democrats and
Republicans both get involved in these foreign elections.
What if the two. Economic, well, one's not a wannabe. You are an economic professor. What if you and the wannabe me? What if we all of a sudden buy a little drone company? Do we think this budget's good or bad?
What I can't hear.
If you and I all of a sudden owned a drone company, do you think the increase in the budget's good or bad? Now we got to have these drones. We got to go kick these guys' ass.
Yeah, that'd be great. But my drones probably wouldn't fly very good because I have no passion for it. Well, I don't want to build.
Wait a minute, neither one of us are going to design a damn thing.
I can't be involved in something where the product that I'm in charge of can kill people. I just can't.
I would have a problem with that too.
I can't work for a marketing firm in New York City. I can't work for a hedge fund company in New York City. I can't do it. I won't do it.
What about a hedge fund company
in those industries?
What about an unhedged company in Chicago like us?
Well, I kind of like just sitting back and commenting on the policy that comes out of D.C. I love doing that.
Yep.
I love collecting data and analyzing what is going to happen theoretically or model that empirically and just report those results.
I encourage you. We got to dash here.
They want with that.
We got to dash. I encourage you to keep going. And I don't know. I'm a fan of one here, I guess. Well, no, Carl, I think, is with me. I encourage you to keep going on this banking stuff because my
next research project is going to be looking at this change in the banking rules in 2020. They're just so perverse.
I think, are you looking at the Dodd-Frank too?
We might go back far enough, but what I'm really interested in is the 2020 changes.
I think you're gonna
start of the COVID lockdown.
I think you're going to find a lot of it started in Dodd-Frank. So I'd give it a little look.
Well,
but you have
regulations are always cartelizing.
But you're you have the, you're touching the edge here of actually putting together all the incongruities that I've been looking at for 20 years, and I congratulate you. I mean, I really do.
Yeah.
I can't. Yeah. Anyway, buddy, talk at you next week, if not sooner. We might, if everything all hell breaks loose over there, we might get a few guys together one of these
Hopefully
days.
Hopefully when I'm driving back from New York next Tuesday, because my wife has a birthday party on Monday in New York.
Oh, good for you.
When we're driving back Tuesday, maybe the war won't be going on.
Not in the electric car, I hope.
No, it's not going to be electric car. I rented a 12-passenger van where I had the owner take out the last row, and we're going to put some cushions back there, so it's a nice, chill ride for my wife.
Okay.
It's her birthday.
All right, bud. Well, take care of yourself. SP Futures only down 25. Now we're up a little bit. NASDAQ Futures down 137. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.